never trailed, led for the better part of 58 minutes, and finished off a contest where you kind of forgot the score because it was 27-3 for most of the time. Final score, 27-17. Notre Dame wins the inaugural 12-team college football playoff game, the first ever played on a home campus. I'm Tim O'Malley of Irish Illustrated with John Bryce of Football Scoop, and JB wasn't pretty, but it had teeth, I think is how we're going to characterize this one. It was a dominant win early, and then the Irish let up a little bit late. But as Al Golden said, he doesn't mind that.
No, and I thought it was very interesting candor from Al Golden. And he talked post-game for the first time ever in his Notre Dame career as part of the playoff process, the standard protocol. But he just said flat out, like, I didn't need us to be exotic late. You made it very clear, I thought, he was keeping some things holstered in his bag. But Notre Dame was the better team. We said that going in. Notre Dame was certainly the more talented team. We felt that very strongly. And Notre Dame was, frankly, the more physical football team. And it showed for 50-plus minutes. And, a lot of cosmetic window dressing that will allow Indiana to contend that it belonged in the playoff. But when you start talking about Alabama being the first team left out, I promise you this game would have probably had a different feel. Doesn't mean Notre Dame wouldn't have won, but I don't think it would have ever been 27-3 had the Alabama Crimson Tide been inside Notre Dame Stadium. But Notre Dame wins its most significant postseason game in a really, really long time, extends its season for another 11 days to Tim O'Malley.
You know, I talked about Jadarian Price suffering some run stuffs, eight of them, and the team probably about 12, but you look down at just the rush efficiency. I try to track during the game, so it's not perfect because I do it as the game is going along. I had Indiana from after they had the two long runs to kind of get down the field to set, as I like to say, set up Xavier Watts' interception. 12 out of 13 runs were inefficient, taking you into the fourth quarter. That is defensive line dominance. That's what Notre Dame did. Now, they did lose Riley Mills to start the second half, fittingly on a 9-yard sack. Looked like he got a little whip action with Jalen Snead hitting his knee. Mills is not necessarily out, as we talked about on Irish Illustrated Insider, Incident Analysis. Hey, can he be Riley Mills, though? I think it's important. But you've harped on this all year. The depth they have built allows them to keep going. That defense played as well as I thought you could against Indiana. I said this isn't going to be a passing day because of the cold, but that defense really settled in after a few chunk gains. I got a little concerned watching those chunk gains early on, but Al Golden's defense always settles in. I tend to forget that, apparently.
Theo, I think you and I both are prone to finding unique stats on a week-in, week-out basis, and you already know where I'm going with this. My favorite stat in a really, really long time is that at the end of the third quarter, Indiana had fewer yards of total offense than it had at halftime. That tells you how dominant it was for Notre Dame in the third quarter, even though Notre Dame probably should have made this a 31-34-3 contest in the fourth quarter, because Notre Dame's tweeting out how our state and we own the state and things like that. Well, they took the deed in the third quarter and then just didn't file it at the courthouse because they wasted too many scoring opportunities. But again, they were the better team, the better coached team today, the more physical team, and the more talented and explosive team.
I'm going to circle back to the start of the game when it was competitive. But first, I want to say that Jack Kaiser was very proud of being a state champion again because he beat Purdue and Indiana in his final game inside Notre Dame Stadium as a Hoosier resident. And JB, did you hear what he said? This place is special. I've spent a quarter of my life here.
I made a note on that. Quarter, yeah, six years. Six of his 24 years at Notre Dame. He'll own the record for career games in perpetuity. There's never going to be another stretch in college athletics like this, not in college athletics as we know it. He got the COVID year. He's been a contributor. Right. He's been a captain, and he's been a hero to a lot of people. And he exits with a perfect script for his Notre Dame team, the season, and specific for his journey as an Indiana native.
Game basically starts with a Riley Leonard tip pass interception, tip to the line, picked off. And that's right when you think, if you're a Notre Dame fan or an analyst that thinks this game shouldn't be close, well, this is how these games get closed. Indiana gets the ball at the 41-yard line. A couple plays later, Xavier Watt. After a third down conversion of 28 yards, it looked like IU was trying to hurry up to make sure that wasn't overturned. I think it would have stood on the field. But in that haste, Xavier Watts picks off an easy one at the post, landing at the 2-yard line.
and discussed that very element with Pete Sampson and a couple of other people, T.O. I really believe that Indiana's hurry-up approach after the long third-down conversion is what triggered the interception, mm-hmm. and not to take away from X Watts being the best safety in college football. That's just simply the fact that IU got to the line so quickly, T.O. I noticed this during the live broadcast that ABC and ESPN had to cut away from showing the replay to get back to the line of scrimmage so that it did not miss live action in the game broadcast. I'll be curious to see if there's additional angles or if we pick up anything else to see if the play would have stood. You're right, it probably would have.
I think he had the ball bouncing on him a little bit, but it was definitely being juggled. That was the issue.
Yeah. I thought, and I was frankly surprised that the officials didn't stop and look at that play when you know that they stopped and looked at the Jordan Faison play later on in the game. But again, the Indiana's expediency in that situation actually turned out to be a huge benefit for Notre Dame. And then Jeremiah Love continued to etch his name in to the annals of all-time great players for Notre Dame, particularly all-time great offensive players for Notre Dame.
Yeah, that was well blocked. And when it was interesting, when a guy like Love, he got that second step, and you realize most of the time you think, oh, good, they're getting out of their back end. Everybody in that stadium realized, oh, good, this one might be going all the way, and the excitement level picked up. And I do think he's banged up a little bit because he let up to let the guy catch up a little bit sooner than he usually does. Although, as he said, I was just out of breath. He apparently had a very bad cold. He sounded like he had a very bad cold. We welcome Tim Priester in. TP, we're finishing off the first quarter here, but of course, tip pass interception by X Watts, Jeremiah Love with the lightning strike. And that wasn't all for Jeremiah Love's day. He still had a stiff arm that's going to be on highlight reels forever. It's going to go on. So the next time Notre Dame drops a hype video for Georgia, you're probably going to see the Jeremiah Love stiff arm on it. But that was about it for Jeremiah after today, trying to preserve him a little bit.
Yeah. I think an additional seven carries for 13 yards other than that. But hey, if that's a ailing Jeremiah Love, Notre Dame will take that, you know, just about every time. But man, he needs to get healthy. It was as we speculated, or I mean, something that I was just skeptical about coming out of Los Angeles, that he would be 100% by this game. And actually, we heard some really positive things about, hey, he's feeling well. And then on Monday, it wasn't quite as good. But Jeremiah Love at 70% or 80% or whatever, 78%, is that what he said he was at some point during the week? Tim, he may be the greatest Notre Dame running back we've ever seen.
He's the most spectacular and the most breathtaking. He's closest thing to Rocket Ishmael you're going to see, and he gets the ball even a little bit more than Rocket did. So it's been a fun journey of 1 year, really. He's a much different player than he was last year. But that first quarter, IU had 6 first down plays. They gained negative 11 yards. Notre Dame had 8 first down plays. They gained 126 yards. One of them went for 98, so they had 7 for 28 yards. But they really held IU in check in that. And I thought when you kind of transition into the second quarter, you see Indiana's defense is going to be able to make some hay in stopping Notre Dame's run as well. Xavier Watts coming up. We talked about Watts to start this broadcast in, but Xavier Watts again in the run game today. That was his best effort against the run. He is you saw it all year long. They would bring him up when they needed it. They decided today this was going to be Xavier Watts. He had his hand in 4 stuffs today as the post safety, when you think about
that. And open field tackling is just brilliant. You know, L. Golden was asked why Watts came back, and he mentioned 3 things. He said post breaks, which is what we saw on the interception, his 13th pick of the last 2 years, which 13 picks in 26 games. That's an absurd number. Anyway, post breaks, man to man, control of the defense. Those are the things that Golden said, but also the open field tackling ability. When he gets in a one-on-one situation, even against a really, really quality back, you feel good about Xavier Watts' chances of making the tackle.
Yeah, I would contend that typically you see a safety leading a team in tackles and you cringe a little bit, but that you throw that out the window with Xavier Watts because he's just such a dynamic player that he getting to where he can play all 3 levels. They don't blitz him a lot, but we've seen them blitz him off the edge a few times over the last couple of years, and he's effective when he does it. He's much more effective than he's ever been in stopping the run. He's become a really, really good cover guy. And we talked about it. I know it was 3 weeks ago, but the play he made on Jaden Maiva at USC, Maiva had a bunch of great throws that day, but his best throw might have been the one that Xavier Watts ranged across the field and broke up in the second half. And so he does everything, 10 tackles today, and just continues to be by far the defensive MVP and one of the best players anywhere in college football.
And maybe you mentioned – go ahead, Tim.
Well, I mean, I thought I wanted to bring up Leonard Moore because I thought Leonard Moore, I was confident that he would play well. He did. Those back shoulder throws didn't really kill Notre Dame, and largely because I turned to O'Malley at one point and I said, it's incredible how long Leonard Moore is. He just plays so long. And then there was concern early on that when Christian Gray gave up the long play that set up the interception by Watts or prior to Watts's interception, he thought, are they going to start picking on Christian Gray? But he ended up holding his own. You know, it never devolved into the what happened at USC. And so Notre Dame was able to keep Rourke in check. You know, I mean, he got a little bit of rhythm at times, but nothing that he could really string together, especially since he just didn't have a ground game around him to supplement it.
I stopped tracking coverage wins on those last two drives, and there were coverage losses on those last two drives, JB, but I had Gray with five. I'm sorry, Gray with three and Leonard Moore with five, and Leonard Moore wasn't getting beaten either.
No, he wasn't, and shout out to Jason Z. He points out that a lot of people are burning the midnight oil. I'm impressed by how many comments and questions we have on a live stream at darn near 2 a.m. Eastern, and so I think that gives you an idea of how excited Notre Dame fans are about what this team has accomplished tonight, or I guess last night now that this is Saturday morning, but just the way this team has improved. And I'll make the point again that I made on instant analysis that I alluded to when I asked Marcus Freeman the question. They started this season sending a tone of physicality down in College Station, Texas, and Marcus Freeman did some stuff in the tunnel there to make sure the team – he took pressure off the team and the team absorbed his personality. I've said – repeatedly, I think this is very clearly the best he's done to have the pulse of the team, and this is a very physical football team that continues to embrace doling out punishment.
Tim, how about the punt decision by Cignetti down 17 with 10 minutes to go in the game? I mean, as it turned out, they scored and they made it competitive, but I didn't understand.
I don't think so, though, really. I mean, they're down 17, and Notre Dame went down and scored, and that ended it. And that's how, you know, they came back and scored after Notre Dame went up 27-3. So it was a terrible decision. It gave them no chance of winning the game, and I have no idea what he was doing. It was worse than anything that happened in the first half, where he would – JB likes to say pucker factor. There's a huge pucker factor in Cignetti's play calling. And we talk about Brian Kelly, Marcus Freeman, like we understand how play calling's going. What was going on in the first half at Cignetti?
And what about the fourth and four where they were going to go for it?
Yeah.
And I thought
they got a look they didn't like, but then they just decided, well, we can't possibly.
Right. Credit to Al Golden there because he subbed, and that's what prevented them from going for it on fourth and four. Like you're sitting there saying, kick the field goal, you want them to kick the field goal. Because it's the worst of two evils, but that was an Al Golden win right there because he substituted and Cignetti didn't like what he saw.
Outstanding point, TP, and it leads me to another one. Notre Dame flat out forced IU to burn two timeouts tonight because of the way it was coached and the looks that it gave, and that was one of them that denied the Hoosiers a chance to go for it on fourth and four. They opted for a field goal, and that in a lot of ways to me was an early white flag. That was a surrender moment. But then when Notre Dame lined up in a wild fake field goal formation, that Notre Dame actually snapped the ball, but after the timeout. But again, they dictated that IU's coaches have to call timeouts. That's a headset win as much as you can get.
Yeah, and that shows. I mean, think about the growth that Marcus Freeman has made during this season. We saw it in the first two seasons, but think about the decision making growth that he's made this year. And he's more confident. He's gone for it on, you know, fake punts and field goals and whatever. He's really, really grown as a game day decision maker who puts the burden on the opposition to counter with something.
A couple of questions. I'm sorry if I'm cutting anybody off or talking out of turn here. A couple of questions about injury updates. Marcus Freeman telling Scott Van Pelt that the initial prognosis is that Riley Mills will not be lost for the season. Some optimism there, especially with Notre Dame having 11 days until it has to play Georgia, and almost 12 days as late as that game will kick off. But anyway, we don't have deadlines anymore. We're on the internet, not print. We're not publishing print products. So, you know, the injury front, we don't know anything about Rocco Spindler. There were no real injury questions tonight other than Marcus Freeman voluntarily saying that Jeremiah Love played tonight at not nearly 100%. And then telling ESPN SportsCenter Scott Van Pelt that the initial prognosis on Riley Mills is great optimism. Bryce Young ended up walking off the field of his own power, and I think that was more being shaken up than anything. I would be incredibly stunned if Bryce Young is limited whatsoever.
Yeah, he looked fine leaving the field. Boy, you can't afford another. Somehow you got to have a close to 100% Riley Mills by January 1st at 8:45, or you're in real trouble.
Conspiracy theorists telling you that he's not out for the year, that might mean Marcus Freeman thinks he's going to be able to play in 30 days, not in 10 as well. Because Tim Priester, you were skeptical of the Jeremiah Love situation flying home. I am skeptical that Riley Mills is fine to play in 10 days and will be Riley Mills at that point. But I do want to get back to when we were talking during the game, when Notre Dame finally started to get a drive together, their drive that wasn't a Jeremiah Love run. Aeneas Williams emerges as part of the drive. Riley Leonard finally starts to scramble. Priester, you're a little critical of his decision-making. I do think, go back to your – the other team had scholarships too, and they're good at playing football, and they confuse Riley Leonard a little bit.
You know, I'm the guy for the last 3 weeks that have been saying really, really good things about Indiana, and I mean, I just want to reiterate that partly a big reason why Notre Dame struggled offensively is because Indiana is just damn good on defense. Their defensive front is good. C.J. West is very good. Carpenter in the middle is a bear. They did a pretty good. I didn't see the numbers. They did a pretty good job on Kamara, did they not? And that guy said that can be. He's a game wrecker.
Yeah, his name was called a couple of times. I'm glad you brought up that drive, the second scoring drive or scoring possession, because I guess one play is a drive, but it's not a drive. That Notre Dame drive that was 16 plays, I happen to be charting it for something else that I'm working on over the course of the weekend. Notre Dame took possession at 8:34 p.m. So we know that the drive was 16 plays for 83 yards, and it lapsed 9 minutes and 8 seconds of game clock. Well, they took possession at 8:34 p.m. They punctuated that drive at 8:49 p.m., guys, and then you go into a commercial break. IU's offense was not on the field for approximately 17 actual minutes in this game tonight, and I just think that was significant. Aeneas Williams was huge on that. Bo Collins with an early chance, and he takes a quick pass on 3rd and 6, and he probably catches it at about 4 yards and immediately spins toward the sideline, gets past the sticks, extends the drive. That was a huge moment. That started Notre Dame being incredibly efficient, especially in the first half on 3rd down. So much about that, the game is encapsulated in that one drive from Notre Dame.
It was also the second touchdown, is what Priester and I said right away. He's like, this is one of your second touchdown games. It absolutely was. Yeah. That was taking control of the tenor. The point of the second touchdown thing is not that you win. It's that you decide how the game is going to go. Whoever scored there is going to go 7-7 or 14-0. Notre Dame took control at that point.
And I mean, not that I wasn't a believer in Aeneas Williams, but I knew he was your number one guy in the class. But that dude is productive every time out. Yeah. Somebody asked us over the last couple of weeks, would Notre Dame just, you know, keep it down to Love and Price? Why would you want to do that? Williams is productive every time. And he was, you know, he came in, he played a significant role in that. It was that 16 play drive, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
No, yeah.
He converted on 3rd down. He had 2 3rd down conversions.
Oh, man, you know, and Notre Dame sputtered a lot, but they were 7 of 13 on 3rd down and held Indiana 4-12, especially in key moments, a lot of 3rd and longs. You know, I haven't even seen the message board. I can only imagine the feeling that a lot of people had coming out of the game. But look, there are no polls, man. There's no style points. None of that matters. What matters is being good enough to compete with and beat Georgia. And I realize that's going to be a tall task, but they did what they had to do against a good Indiana team, a good defensive Indiana team. And obviously the game wasn't as close as score indicated.
I don't want to harp on the field goals, cause we did talk about it on Instant Analysis post game, but the reaction to Jeter's 49-yard field goal, which, by the way, was a 49-yard field goal to end the half, not a 36-yard field goal to end the half. That was a big play. JB, I think you rightfully pointed out, second biggest play of the game probably at that point because of the emotional lift it gave them too. And remember, it kind of answered a field goal along the way. It answered a field goal that Indiana scored that they settled for. Notre Dame didn't settle for it. They worked to get that field goal to end the half. But is it five blocks now?
I think it is. Yeah, I think it's less than
five kicks blocked in a season. And you're this good of a team.
Well, that's, you know, and it's unfortunate that Marty Biagi has to wear that, but he does. And we talked about during game, we talked about all season. Reno Monteforte is just so small in there that he can't redirect any of the interiors.
And when Vinci's in there, he's smaller. He doesn't stand up. They don't stand up on the ball. I mean, there's technique obviously involved in what they're choosing. They're choosing to teach that technique. But defenders are just getting over the line.
Right. You got to get them off their block a little bit.
I think when you look at it, when you talk to people in the program, though, it's a lot of the blocks are not occurring directly over center. A lot of the blocks are not occurring directly over Reno Monteforte. I think the guard play on the field goal kick unit has been a bit of an issue. Cleaning up on Aeneas Williams real quickly, 8 touches for approximately 40 yards. He had a 12-yard run that he darn near busted for 30, 40 or more. And then he had a 9-yard reception. So again, 8 touches right at 40 yards, a long of 12 on the ground, a long of 9 receiving the football, continuing to show, I think, Dylan McCullough's excellence in getting guys that fit roles, that embrace those roles, and that can do more than just one thing. You know, Jeremiah loves Superman, but Aeneas Williams got a pretty good toolbox as well for things that he can do to help the Irish.
Kamian Beavers asks if Riley Mills doesn't play against UGA, who is playing and what chance do we have? I just want to point out Rubio's his backup. They'll find a way to work. They'll find a way to work Donovan Heinisch in a little bit more, but Heinisch is Howard Cross's backup, as everybody knows, because Cross missed so much time. They did get, as soon as Riley Mills was hurt, Sean Sevillano jumped up and was doing on the sidelines, was starting working on his get off. So he is the third guy in, I believe.
Tough time to break a guy in.
Yeah,
on the interior defensive line, if they have to do that.
Yeah, not the only key to the game as we look 11 days out. But if Riley Mills can't go for Notre Dame, you start in an immediate disadvantage because that Georgia offensive line played some of its best ball the last month of the season from the way that they dominated Tennessee, especially over the final 30 minutes of that game. The way that they found their footing against Georgia Tech and found a way to win it in large part because their offensive line wore down Georgia Tech over the course of overtime. And then certainly the way that they controlled tempo in 2 games against Texas, the number 5 seed in the playoffs. So Riley Mills is barely the second most important Riley on the team. And I mean just barely because Riley Leonard and Riley Mills, their health status, and Riley Leonard is fine. But I'm just saying those guys – are critical as we start to just pivot ever so slightly to the Georgia matchup.
Priester, speaking of injuries, Pendleton in for Spindler. I mean, they get a little less physical there
in terms of
being the more physical team on the field against Georgia. You get a little less physical with Pendleton going to make his first career start at right guard. Unless they have time to move Schroff, that could be a thing. I mean, Pendleton was the starting left guard and Schroff was the starting right guard until Schroff got hurt. That was the situation. Maybe in this amount of time they move him back, but I think that is – Spindler, I thought, had been playing pretty good football in the run game before.
There's two schools of thought there. I mean, you've done your best blocking in the second half of the season with Schroff on the left side. Do you really want to mess up the chemistry? Because there is chemistry with him and Anthony Knapp together on that side. So, I don't know. They need Rocco Spindler to be healthy.
He was in street clothes the rest of the game for people.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy. He's the second most experienced guy up front with Pat Coogan. Coogan had his hands full today with those interior linemen. And I was hopeful that, you know, maybe I was overplaying that a little bit. Maybe I was giving too much credit to West and Carpenter, but those dudes are good, man. They're good.
Actually, there's thoughts here. We don't have the game broadcast, but two people, Jason Z and Regine. Is it Regine or Regine? Possible concussion.
Regine's our guy. Yeah, I kind of thought concussion by the fact that he was back in street clothes, but there was no visible limp. We didn't see him. There wasn't a play
I actually did think there was a limp. That's why I didn't think it was a concussion. But I tell you what, if you're concussed and you're walking down to the field and you came back from a knee injury, your knee might hurt when it's 20 degrees out there too, JB. That's possible, right?
That's a great, couple of questions there. Cayman Beavers, I think, and Bob Poole wanting to know if the Big Ten will go 0-3. I don't think so. I think Penn State and Ohio State both win tomorrow.
I think Ohio State is the pick of the day tomorrow, actually. Yeah. I think there's way, way, way too much negativity around them, and that, you know, and that happens to Notre Dame too. It's like, how in the world are they going to beat somebody? Yeah. They're at home. The Tennessee quarterback is not comfortable in playing that kind of weather. I'm getting off topic, but I like it.
Thank you, Rajan. And so I think that to your point, I've said it all week long in some different radio spots and things that I've done. Ryan Day, for all the pressure that he's under tomorrow, and I don't minimize that, but he's had his job done for him for the last 3 weeks because Ohio State's players have been told how much they suck. And so much of his motivation is done. These guys are sick of hearing it, and I can't get over the fact that I just have to believe a guy from like Long Beach, California is going to struggle in very similar temperatures tomorrow night in Columbus. And that being Nico Iamaliava, the Vols quarterback, as compared to Will Howard, the Ohio State quarterback, who's from Pennsylvania and has played in much more cold weather. I think Ohio State's really talented. I think Penn State may physically really get after SMU tomorrow, especially if SMU can't stop the Penn State running attack early. If Penn State can use its throw game in the play action pass with Davis Warren and Nick Singleton in the backfield, then I think Penn State can make it a really, really long day for SMU.
Wanted to shout out to Jordan Clark and Drake Bowen for fourth quarter performances. They got IU off the field twice where the game was pseudo competitive on third down. One set up the punt that never should have happened. And then it was on the ensuing possession as well. But I thought Bowen didn't hear his name at all in the first half. All of a sudden, Drake Bowen was all over the field there in about a 4 minute span. Another good game by Jordan Clark. It's amazing what they get.
One of Jordan Clark's better games. Yeah, really showed up a lot.
I thought so too. And Drake Bowen technically credited with the only two right now official quarterback hurries in the Notre Dame defensive box score. We know that will change.
Right.
Those always seem to get gypped over the course of the stat allocation during a live game, and they get updated on Mondays. But Drake Bowen, two pressures. He got a really nice hit in on Curtis Rourke that I think sent a message as well. And Notre Dame did a much better job over the balance of the second half of affecting Rourke and really giving him a lot to think about in terms of pressure coming at him from different areas. And I'm like Al Golden. I like the fact that he acknowledged he felt the game was in hand, and he basically just flat out said, I started playing pretty vanilla there because I'm not going to show all of my cards. And, hey, if you're Notre Dame, all you want to care is that you're still sitting at the table able to play those cards, and you get to play those cards again in 11 days.
And I will say Drake Bowen also tore up a screen pass on third down. That was a beautiful play where he tore up the screen pass for a one-yard gain. Did you guys notice Jaden Osbury had 2.5 tackles for loss during that game? He just shows up and makes plays. He has a giant brace on his arm right now, too.
That's exactly the point. That's why I raised my finger. I was about to say he's got a RoboCop brace on his arm, and he still showed up and made a bunch of plays.
He is as natural of a defender and magnet to the football as Notre Dame has. I think Xavier Watts has developed into that. They've got a lot of guys like that. Al Golden, I mean, you can't say it enough. He's just done a sensational job of developing player after player after player after player.
They did end on a positive. Jordan Clark's pass breakup stopped the two-point conversion. It was nice to get a stop defensively there after the touchdown was scored. I wanted to point out, I don't think Bo Collins dropped a pass today. That was a tough, at least live.
Onside kicks.
No, I know that. Separately from that, he didn't drop that. He didn't try to catch it.
Yeah, I think when you go back and look at the one play, it wasn't a routine catch, but a slant where he's going to the ground that would have extended a drive went through his arms. I bet Bo Collins would call it a drive.
I have a bigger problem with the onside kick that was made a business decision when a kicker is coming to get you.
Twice. Yeah. He managed to get the second one, but – look, I'm real critical of Bo Collins. I just, his inconsistency this year. There are there are portal wide receivers out there that will be in the fold here soon that I'm confident will be a much more aggressive player than Bo Collins was.
Yeah, I think so. You know, but I do think that it's important to note on that 16-play drive that we talked about,
really
Bo Collins had the first third down.
Really big play. You know, really big play.
It was a confident play where, again, he catches a four-yard out when they need 6 yards, and he had to be aggressive and he had to be decisive and he had to get upfield. And you'll never see a more important 8-yard catch or whatever it was from Bo Collins.
It was a September play. That's how Bo Collins played in September. Bo Collins was a confident Notre Dame football player in September.
Yeah.
It's been a while since we have seen that. Great point here, though, by Bob Poole. At no point during the game that I think ND would lose.
Yeah.
That is the takeaway from today.
What did we say on instant analysis pregame? We said Notre Dame has respect for them, thinks they're incredibly well coached, but Notre Dame knew in its soul it was the better team. It was the more talented team, the deeper team. And I'm along with Bob Poole. Like, Notre Dame, you felt really early. Jamie Uyama, who does a great job, came to me and said, I think this game might get really ugly if Notre Dame goes up 14-0. And this game was a hell of a lot closer to 27-3 than it was 27-17.
Yes.
Yeah. But Cignetti's a good coach and a well-coached team and a defense.
You're exactly right, Corey Flynn. We are.
Yeah.
Anything on the only game we didn't cover is Clemson, Texas. You guys get your predictions in before we end overtime?
I've got Texas covering.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I've got Clemson covering.
Oh, okay. I think Texas, I forget the stat, maybe they haven't allowed 300 yards of offense this entire season, or maybe it's not 350. I think they probably find a way to turn over Cade Klubnik in Texas to be the 5 seed. Still has a little bitter taste in its mouth with something to prove because it lost its 2 biggest games to Georgia. So I like Texas to get it done and to get it done covering.
I'm going to leave you guys with this. We all said Notre Dame was going to play under in this game. If they keep going, under against Georgia, under against either Texas, Ohio State, or Tennessee, whoever comes through there, maybe not Oregon. I think that's when you get a little loose. You got to play a different way. You got to win a different style of football game if Notre Dame can keep winning. But before that, tall task against Georgia. We'll be back. This is it for Irish Illustrated Overtime. We'll be back with a podcast on Monday. Tim, and this is just thrown off a little bit here. We have tomorrow is Saturday. Tim Priester, when's the tail of the tape going
on? Oh,
when's
please.
Sunday music is what's supposed to happen.
I'm asking for the ability to, instead of spending 5 hours rewatching Notre Dame game tomorrow, I would like to watch the playoffs. So I would like to rewatch Notre Dame on Sunday and then have my tail of tape on Monday. So fair warning to everybody. I'm going to give myself that little joy of being able to watch 3 playoff games.
Back on track, I think I have a 9-year-old basketball game to go to in 5 hours and 12 minutes before the report card. So until then, JB, last words?
I was just going to say I probably have some football scoop work tomorrow, but the goal is not to leave the house, and maybe JLB Hoosier and I will grill up a steak tonight. And she's celebrating Notre Dame's win. I want to make that clear. I've already seen some of her celebratory. Hey.
And we are headed to New Orleans. I haven't been there in 18 years.
I'm going to start making dining reservations now, boys. I got this.
I don't believe in the whole thing about not looking ahead. I already made all those reservations. I booked my flight a long time ago. For John Bryce from Football Scoop, Tim Priester of Irish Illustrated, I'm Tim O'Malley. Thanks for joining us on Irish Illustrated Overtime. And Corey Flynn, it's not early. We're not calling it quits. We have stories to write, too. This is the
internet. I got snap judgments to finish.
Thanks for joining.